www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast with just Martin, actually. First one of the new year, Martin. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Not too bad. Happy New Year to you. Christmas was pretty good. Quiet for all of us in the UK. I think quiet for everybody around the world generally. So
quiet when you're not allowed to go anywhere.
And we're definitely not allowed to go anywhere anymore.
No, we're absolutely locked down, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're definitely locked down. But never mind, we're making the most of it. And I'm sure, you know, we all did what we could over Christmas and tried to enjoy as much as we could.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's good to be back and ready for a new year. So, I don't know. It's difficult to know where to start, really. When you look back at our review that we did with Chris Meller, we covered many different things there. So I didn't think it would be a good idea to necessarily go back and do a predictions show, bearing in mind we'd almost done a predictions at the end of the last one. But what I did want to go back and talk about is something you may have thought about over the Christmas break. You may have been putting it into your machine, except you're not. I know you're not because you've got an AMD. But just generally, where we're headed with Optane deployment, both from a consumer perspective and from a data center perspective. And I just think it'd be interesting to talk that through because it feels like Optane's just on the cusp of real sort of big rollout in the data center. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I think it is. And Intel are desperate for it now because it's their, you mentioned I've got an AMD system at home, which I have, but it's their differentiator at the moment. But Optane on Intel platform, you can't have it on an AMD platform, not in in a form which you might want to use. So it's a key differentiator. It's something which they've got which nobody else has at the moment, or what AMD haven't got. And their chipset and their chips themselves are behind the curve when compared to some of their competitors. So they need something, and also it's quite an interesting technology as we'll get into.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about how it's different to Flash. And it just suddenly dawned on me there that I'm saying that, of course, we can't deploy it on an AMD platform, but you can't deploy one of the formats on an AMD platform. But I don't see any reason why you couldn't use the SSD format on AMD.
Absolutely. You could use it as that accelerated cache tier in a SSD, but we can't use it in the persistent memory, the PMEM format.
Yeah. I'm just going to remind everybody, in case you haven't really sort of looked at the detail of what Optane 3D XPoint, as it's generically known, what it looks like. There are two form factors. So we can deploy it as a standard SSD, which means it will just plug in replacement of your SSD or hard drive in a PC or in a server. Or we can use it in a DIMM slot in what's known as persistent memory, and that needs a protocol called DDRT, which is the very specific protocol that Intel have developed for their chipset, which is why we say you can't use it on an AMD platform. And the difference there is it looks like either real memory or it looks like a pseudo type of memory. I'm not going to go into the detail of breaking all that down because there's plenty of other content we can link to, but effectively what we're saying is it can be used as what's called persistent memory in the DIMM slot. So those are the two form factors, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's just start by thinking about using Optane at home. Assuming you've got a PC, assuming you can pull the cover off it and put stuff in, so as in not a Mac, not a MacBook, because you're not going to be doing anything with those. Or my new Mac Mini, by the way, which is very nice, but it is not expandable. But if you've got a PC, you could quite happily put Intel into that in one of two formats. So either you could either splash the cache and put an entire Optane drive in, or you can use the Optane memory H10, which is like a hybrid, isn't it?
Yeah. Which is not dissimilar to the way SSDs have worked traditionally anyway, with this high speed tier, and we've seen it more and more. I mean, you've seen it with QLC as a majority of a drive, and maybe SLC as a cache tier. We'll see more and more of this. So yeah, that's what we kind of expect. Gives you really good bang for buck, I think. You've looked at some prices, I see. So
I'll just summarise some of the specifications on these. So the H10 that I looked at is 32 gig Optane, 1 terabyte QLC flash. So it's a combination of the two. And obviously there's some intelligence there to effectively use the Optane as a cache piece. And I would imagine the idea is it absorbs all the writes to increase the endurance. And it's also a read for the hottest data, whereas the rest of the reads come from the QLC. And you see something like 250,000 to 330,000 IOPS out of a single M2 format, the 2280 format, which is what they call the gum stick, around 1800 to 2400 megabytes a second. It's a PCI 3 device. And for the 1 terabyte, that's £195 of our English pounds for that. Probably similar in America in terms of dollars. But that's not exorbitant for a 1 terabyte SSD, if you like, for that sort of performance.
No, it's not. It's not exorbitant. It's probably a little bit higher than a lot of the top-end NVMe consumer-based drives. But certainly, your pricing is probably about where we were with those drives 18 months, 2 years ago. So, yeah, I think that's a reasonable price, and it'd be tempting if you wanted that kind of performance. It'd be interesting to see what performance figures you do get out of it. Obviously, if you're an AMD user, it's only a PCIe 3 device. It's not a 4 device. I've seen Phison announce a new controller for the PCIe 4 devices, which is supposed to be stupidly fast. So that's where it will get interesting. It'd be very interesting to see what it looks like from a boot speed point of view. But, I mean, does it give you instant on?
Yeah. As another price point, I also found one which is 256 gig SSD and 16 gig of buffer, but that was £99. So obviously, there's a much better margin if you go for the larger device in terms of the cost. That's an interesting point, though, about boot device. Now, first of all, I don't know whether you can boot. I'm sure you must be able to boot off an M2
slot. Yeah, you can. I do it all the time.
No reason why not.
Yeah.
So assuming you can do that, you'd hope that it would be really quick.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on the operating system, if you've got most of it in Optane at boot time, that would be pretty quick. I guess the question is there, I don't really know whether there's any sort of tuning going on that you can modify yourself. So, for instance, you know, there might be certain files you know are going to be read at boot up, and if they're not big, you'd want to pin those to make sure they came up first. So I don't know how tunable this sort of device is, if at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what you can pin or whether you could pin anything into it. If you could, it would be good. I do hang around on some of the gaming forums. I've not seen anybody talking about what the Optane hybrid drives, and they're the sort of the lunatics who would go and do this because a lot of them seem to think money's no object.
Yeah.
And thought that they could have their games loading even faster as games get bigger, with 4K textures flying around the place, and pulling those off SSD. This could be a very useful tool for some of those people.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if you think about the I/O profile of what you might be doing on this, then generally I would say most home users, 99% of their I/O is read, and a small amount is write. So the write buffer absorbing the writes and offering the endurance at the same time, you'd hope that this could be a pretty good device for home usage.
As home users get more and more into media, it means that they can scrub backwards and forwards in their home videos, which are now shooting at UHD, with the serial-based file reads. It's very predictable. So it might make a big difference when they can write things back. It just speeds. You're throwing so much data around if you're actually doing any kind of home video editing. Would be a very useful tool.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's the sort of thing where you could see real benefit for this. That sort of prosumer sort of hybrid model where you are doing a lot more desktop work where it would potentially offer you quite a good benefit.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to see what you could get out of it on your new Mac Mini.
Well, I can't put anything in. I can't connect anything into it.
Can you put an external drive on it?
I could do. It's got a USB 4 USB-C connector, so I could try that. Interesting idea. Watch this space. And in fact, I've got an SSD that's got a USB-C connection on it as well, so that might give me a bit of a benchmark. Mm. When we're finished recording, I'm going to order something up and see what happens. Spending more money.
I'm spending your money for you, Chris.
Absolutely. So just as unless Intel are listening and want to send me something, but I doubt that's the case. So just as a comparison, I looked at to see if I could find a sort of native, pure Optane drive. And relatively speaking, it's pretty expensive. So you're looking at 16 gigs, about £50. And 118 gig, it's an odd number, but around £350. That's obviously a significant markup over the hybrid, not surprisingly. And it's quite expensive. So if you went pure Optane in a PC, you'd be really spending money possibly you don't need to at this point.
Yeah, certainly. Actually, does give you an idea about what the cost of a 256 gig SSD is, because Intel Optane 16 gigs, £50. A 256 gig SSD with a 16 gig Optane buffer is £99. So £49 of that is your SSD cost. For 256 gig, and £50 of it is 16 gig.
Exactly. So there you go. You can see the, you can see how the pricing's done.
But, but it's expensive. I mean, when you get up to 118 gig for 350 quid, that's not a large amount of storage for a home user. That's about it's about a game these days.
Yeah, so if you look at the 256 gig versus the 16, if you divide that £99 in half, that is effectively 16 times more expensive.
Yeah.
So not cheap. So what alternatives could the home user have to putting this into their device? And one of the things I looked and thought is a possibility is a bit of software called Fuse Drive, if you've ever seen that.
I've seen similar things. I'm guessing it's an intelligent caching type solution.
Yes, it is, to a certain degree. It basically amalgamates your slow and fast components together to make what looks like a logical drive. And then it manages where the data sits on that. It tries to optimize the placement from a performance perspective. Obviously, if it works well, you could get a really small Optane component and a really, really big flash component. So, you know, you could do it yourself. You don't have to buy the H10. You could build something and use a bit of software like that. I think you probably wouldn't care so much about the inconsistency in the performance if you were using it, because, you know, once you mix and match things like this, there's the chance that you're going to get uneven performance and it's not going to be predictable. But for home use, I don't think you really care.
Generally, you don't. Most people don't. As I say, unless you're video editing at home, and when you probably do, you will care if it's wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, but the chances are most of the time, the majority of that data is probably going to be in the Optane component anyway because it's all hot. But so I think you're probably okay. So at the end of the day, what I think is amazing about looking at the technologies, if you think back to when we were even 10 years ago, when we were looking at hard drives and laptops and PCs, and we were thinking about millisecond response times. Yeah. We're now looking at microsecond response times, that order of magnitude in terms of numbers, that were the same as what we were getting millisecond-wise. So we'd like a thousandth of the performance, if you like, of the latency, which is just incredible to think about in such a short time.
It is, the whole thing is the latency, the IOPS. The thought that your home PC could be quarter of a million, third of a million IOPS. That was unthinkable in enterprise arrays probably 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that is probably one of the most amazing things as you look back and think how different it is in what we used to pay in the millions of dollars we would pay for enterprise storage that would never even give us hundreds of thousands of IOPS, you know, unless you were paying an awful lot of money. And now you're going to get it in a little gum stick that's no bigger, about the same size of a stick of chewing gum. Incredible.
The only thing is for people have to write some decent code now. They can't just blame it all on the storage.
No, that is true. I think your code is going to show up a lot more of the issues about it if you're doing lazy I/O and you're not managing your I/O properly.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's all part of the evolution and the circle of storage life, isn't it?
Yeah.
That one minute the application's working fine and then the hardware comes along and exposes the issues, so then you rewrite the software and so we go around. Okay, so what about in the data center then? So the consumer side of it sounds great, but we're probably not going to use M2s in the data center unless we're using them as a boot drive.
Yeah.
Because typically the capacity isn't there, the reliability isn't there, and also they're not going to be hot pluggable easily. I'm not sure that M2 is hot pluggable, to be honest. I don't think it is, or at least it didn't used to be. But in reality, it's going to sit inside a server, so you're not going to really be that keen and comfortable about hot plugging it. So we're going to be looking at U2 format, which is like a standard drive size, and also the plug-in cards, AICs, you know, add-in cards and so on. And quite a few platforms have already been using Optane for quite some time. I made a list here and I'll just quickly go through them and then, you know, you can give me your opinion. So from an SSD perspective, and this is not DIMM, we'll come back to the DIMM side in a moment, we've seen Store1, who are using Optane as a write tier, typically, to accelerate writes and coalesce them down. There's Vast Data, who are doing a similar thing with their technology. There's Pure Storage with Direct Memory, they're using the technologies of read tier. 3PAR added Optane 3 years ago, maybe?
I think so. I've been talking to him about it. So
and that was to extend the metadata cache so they could access more metadata without having to put more memory in the actual physical server that the 3PAR platform ran on. Vexata had an all Optane solution, and I'm sure there are others that I missed off. But I think the reason I picked those is that you're seeing a mixture there of all Optane accelerating metadata, Optane accelerating cache, an Optane acting as a tier of storage, both in the metadata and in the data itself. So it's already quite active.
It is. I think we're seeing Optane used quite a lot for metadata in some of the scale out file systems as well. People are starting to use it there. It makes perfect sense where you've got billions of files and you want the metadata lookups as quick as possible. I'm thinking about my old favourite GPFS spectrum scale. I know there's people who've been starting to use it there. So yeah, I can see it really does have a place in the data centre. That said, I'm not seeing it at massive scale yet.
Okay. Two other areas that, of course, we should talk about is, and these are people we've spoken to recently. In the DIM format, we spoke to Memverge.
Yeah.
Memverge potentially extending the memory footprint using the Optane version. And I think they seem to be very popular within Intel. Intel use Memverge as one of their main examples of the implementation of the technology. So they're an Intel favorite. There's also MCAS, which we spoke to Daniel a couple of weeks ago, just before Christmas, and it's being used there. So even the DIM format is starting to come out in operation. But interestingly, that usage there is probably being driven by operating system amendments to make the technology usable, rather than plug and play and using it directly, or even just plugging it in and having an application use it.
Operating systems are really starting to look at how they make much better use of these high-speed storage devices, because we know if you look in a stack, you know that most of the time it's spent waiting for I.O. But one way in which you can really start to get your value for CPU is by accelerating this storage stack. So we're waiting around that. So we've got to get that optimized.
Yeah, and we've seen it already. So when we spoke to Phil Bullinger, as an example, from at the time Western Digital, now CEO at Infinidat, interestingly, when we spoke to him, obviously, we talked about the way that the operating system, at least Linux anyway, was already using the SMR drives and was able to optimize the use of them, because there was a driver built into Linux to allow you to do that. Obviously, Windows has had DAX format for a while, which allows them to use Optane. So I think the operating system vendors are addressing this. So now it's a case of saying, right, okay, Mr. Application Provider, show me how you're now going to take the flexibility the operating system is giving you and start using it. And I would like to see more examples of perhaps where that's happened and where there's some obvious benefit from that.
Yeah, I think we'll see the database providers probably first. I'll be surprised if it, and I haven't actually looked, it might already be there. I might be surprised to see the open source NoSQL databases, the Cassandras, the Mongos of this world really start to try it, because they iterate much quicker than, say, the traditional RDMS systems. Yep. And they can try it, and they're constantly tweaking, and they know their storage engine is really, really important to them. That's a lot of their focus has been in the past.
I think there's another angle to that as well, I think that's worth thinking about, and that's one of the things we don't really talk about that much with Optane, is that if you look at it compared to an SSD and NAND, you're not writing it in the same way that you'd write an SSD. So SSDs are written in at a block level, and effectively you work backwards, you erase backwards. So you can change the bits to a point where, as long as you can change them the right direction, you can keep changing bits, but you get to a point where you can't flip it the opposite direction. I think, just trying to think which way around it is, I think everything is set as a one, and you can flip it to a zero from memory. So as long as you're changing the data to head back towards a zero, that's fine. But you can't flip a zero back to a one unless you erase the whole block.
Yeah.
So ultimately, depending on the type of data you're managing, an SSD is great until you throw a lot of data at it and it has to do a lot of garbage collection. So it doesn't absorb write I.O. very well, particularly. It's not sustained write I.O. Whereas Intel's Optane or 3D XPoint is much more of a byte addressable medium and doesn't have that garbage collection challenge that you do with NAND. So as a result, if you've got something like a key value store where you're running very small pieces of data that might be a few bytes long, you are potentially much better off from an endurance and performance perspective with Optane than you would be with a NAND device, for example.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, it's very true.
So the interesting thing is, yet again, understanding the way the media works determines whether it's going to be right for your application. It's not just a case of slotted in, and away you go. You have to know how to deal with it. But potentially it could be really good, but there are still issues, aren't there? So first of all, the cost. Now, I think I found something that said that the 1.5 terabyte AIC was about $2,500, which is pretty meterly expensive, but that's probably about the same price as what we were looking at everything else.
Yeah, I mean, $2,500 for a 1.5 terabyte drive.
But the relevance there is that, you know, when you look at the cost of the rest of the server,
yeah,
that's going to be a major component now in the cost of a server, unless you're building humongous servers. That's quite a considerable chunk of the cost, I think.
Yeah, I'm just thinking what it does to the cost. I mean, you obviously, you're probably not going to build your whole storage device out of these or stack it through with 150 terabytes of Optane. Maybe you will. I don't know. I probably wouldn't at the moment. I'd be very interested what the cost looks like by the time a vendor's integrated it into an array.
As I said there, Vexata did have an all Optane array. And I'm sure if you talk to George over at Store One,
yeah,
he would probably sell you an all Optane solution.
Probably go to their website and find out, actually.
Actually, you could, yeah, that's true. You could probably price it up.
Yeah.
But in reality, I don't think you get back to that same problem we have time and time again. Something new comes along like this, and you probably can't fully exploit the performance of it until the software is suitably rewritten to take advantage of it. So you might put it in an array as an accelerator. The issue I see there with the pure storage option of that is that it's there doing read acceleration, when the big thing that Optane offers is endurance on write. So I'm not sure that's offering me value for money there. Or you could put it into a server and then you could use it in a small quantity. And again, somehow you've got to use the operating system or something else to make the best use of it. Now, one of the scenarios, the hypervisor or in a virtual file system, you know, those are two other ways you could do it too. So it's not like you can't do it, but it does seem a bit like it'll be tactical deployments.
Well, we're back where we were with SSDs. SSDs were deployed very tactically in arrays, yes, and in servers, still are to a certain extent. Probably most technology vendors and technology users still haven't got their head around SSDs about how the best way to use them. So we just use them tactically because we just drop them in. But just a faster floppy disk.
Yes. A faster floppy disk. Yeah, that's one way to look at it, definitely. And slightly more capacity than a floppy disk, but not much.
Well, I was going to say, I wasn't going to say it's a faster tape or a faster paper tape, because at least it's still a random access device.
Yeah, but yeah. That's true. One area where I did see a problem is the idea of how you'd use it in a containerized environment. So imagine if you're using, say, CSI, where you connect a volume to a container, you're going to have some metadata to tell you what the device is. But it's going to be back to what it was in the old days when we first started SSDs, or started using SSDs, is you have to be careful you're not dedicating everything to that particular container. You know, you can't necessarily say, I'll have 10% of this Optane device being given to this container and the rest of it can be flash. You're going to need another layer of storage sitting there that's going to give that to you. So the container storage guys, if they're going to use this effectively, StorageOS, for example, Portworx, all those sort of people, they're going to have to consider how they're going to build this into their hybrid architectures to make it work effectively, I think.
I think there's actually a problem not just with container, it's with virtualization as well. The concept provision IOs or IOPS, where you're using quite a small cache and you're hoping that you're not going to deplete your cache. Mm-hmm. As soon as you go into virtualized environments, you will deplete that cache. So you're probably going to need more. And then potentially you're looking at that nightmare scenario. We all know about, so this is the nightmare in enterprise. We said home users don't care about inconsistent performance too much. Enterprises certainly do not like inconsistent performance.
You certainly don't want the write cliff either. You don't hit that, or the read cliff, where you hit that problem, yeah, where you suddenly filled it up and then bang, everything's awful. Now, I would say, to be fair to the Optane technology, you would drop back from super performance to great performance. You know, you're going to go from maybe a sub 10 microsecond read write profile to something like a sub 100 microsecond. Yeah. So, but that's still a factor of 10. That's still an order of magnitude in terms of difference. Mm. And if your application is that sensitive to the latency, that is a potential problem.
Well, again, if your application is that sensitive to latency, you may not have virtualized it in the first place.
Yeah. Or you maybe need to consider using dedicated storage hardware connected to it. All those sort of things come back into play, don't they? That's the thing.
Are we going to end up with quads within the drives?
Well, I think when you look at the H10 as a guideline, it does make me wonder whether that's where Intel could head, where they build their own enterprise hybrid drives. Mm-hmm. Because there is potentially a justification in the market for having something faster than SSD or even just more resilient than SSD that can be very write intensive yet still last 5 years in use. So there's a justification for it, but the challenge again is always going to be that consistent performance. Can they build that hybrid to make it consistently performant? Gosh, is that a word? If you can, I suppose, yeah, there's a justification for it, but it's just a lot more complex engineering, I guess, to get to that point.
Yeah, I think so. I think Optane is going to bring quite a lot of engineering complexity. Hopefully it's all going to be hidden from us. We won't know about it. But say the tuning, what does where, the impact on dedupe, compression, encryption, because we're talking about the point of using Optane is it's very, very fast.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to put anything in that path which is going to change the latency characteristics?
Yeah, as in go through some sort of compression or encryption process. Yeah. I'll tell you one other thing I've noticed, which is probably related to IP protection and Intel wanting to control the market a bit more, and that's no vendor I've seen so far has taken the Optane chips directly and built them into a product. So whereas other vendors have built their own SSDs and taken raw NAND, like Pure have done, I haven't seen anybody who's taken raw Optane chips and built them into a solution. And I suspect that's because Intel just simply aren't going to sell them that way. There's just no need for them to do that at this point.
Yeah, with them being a single source, there's no compete. If you're going to buy Optane, you're going to buy it from Intel.
Yeah.
They don't need
there
to.
There should be multiple sources because Micron has the same technology. They're just not selling it. Yeah, no, or at least they don't appear to be selling it.
I was going to say, but yeah, Micron don't seem to be selling at the moment. So Intel don't need to at the moment. I'm sure they could. They just don't need it. And actually, maybe at the moment, the customers themselves, the Intel's customers, don't want to get into that space quite yet.
Yeah, I think in the short term, there's possibly a question that says, you really need to understand the characteristics of this media. And we're only in Generation 2. You know, and even then, Generation 2 was only announced sort of November, December last year. So really, we're very early into this technology. And until we've had a few more generations to see if that performance profile will continue to reduce or improve, depending on whether you're talking about latency or throughput, and whether we're going to see capacities increase, you might not want to jump on board yet. So it might well be that people want to hold back a bit. And using a discrete device like an AIC is just an easier way to get into the game.
It's that capacity increase, I think, which everybody's waiting to see. I don't know what their yields are like, but also it's that capacity. But they're still relatively, a pure Optane device is still relatively small, or if you want to get large, it's really expensive.
Yeah, that's something we've definitely got to wait and see. So, questions then. Would you consider buying it for home?
You know what? Now looking at those prices, I might do. Not this time round, but probably next time I get round to building a PC, which probably won't be 2 or 3 years now. I think at that point I will definitely be looking at that. And I think there'll be more experience with home users. There'll be some bleeding edge geeks who'll have put it in their PCs and be able to say, okay, it really makes a difference. We might be able to see some bake-offs. We might see some sort of people, some proper benchmarks, even if someone might be a bit synthetic, but just to see what it looks, we're going to see some YouTube videos, somebody just touching their PC and it just turns on or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be good to see, actually. That'd be fun to see. Outside of that, I think we've answered most of these other questions, but I think the question, I guess, for the data center is, do we feel we are seeing a groundswell of adoption, that we are seeing it slowly starting to get there? And is there something, for example, they could do to make the DIMM format more attractive, more useful? Or is it just a case of time? Is it just a case of waiting for people to just generally get into using it?
I think it's a case of waiting. I think it's a case for applications and operating systems to be fully optimized to use it. It would be cost again. But I think it's probably down to application and operating system support.
Yeah. I would say that. I think we are doing exactly as you said earlier. We are doing exactly what we did with the SSD adoption. We're following that same curve, tactical placement. And as we saw with SSDs, that we needed things like dedupe technology to come along and make the effective cost look more attractive for a lot of users. And bit by bit, as prices came down, we decided we were comfortable with it. I think we need to go through that again.
Yeah, I think if it's fast enough, and I think if the integration's there, the DIMM format especially starts to play nicely into a lot of companies' green agenda. If you don't have to stack your servers full of very expensive and very power-hungry traditional DRAM, and you can replace half of it in a DIMM format with your Optane, and it's, you've still got the performance there, that's where people are going to start getting interest as well, because it really is starting to become something that people are looking at.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, I'm going to go off now and look at how much it's going to cost me to buy an M2 and an M2 adapter and see what performance throughput I can get from it. Because, and what I'm thinking here is that if I actually just buy an ordinary M2 SSD, I'll be interested to see whether the bus is, you know, the conversion part is adding a significant amount of overhead and latency to that connectivity. Or whether you really do need to put it in natively right into the, you know, the motherboard of a PC. But I'm going to go and have a look, I think.
I think with your Mac Mini, you could do some very interesting comparisons. So, yeah, I think that would be a great test, actually.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go away and look at that now. But for now, Martin, thank you very much. And catch up with you next time.
Catch up with you next time. Be great.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.